This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We're back. It's the Junkyard Dogcast, everybody. I'm Jake Rowe with Dogs 24/7. With me is Kip Adams, also of Dogs 24/7. Rusty Mansell is on the road today. This is a little bit of an emergency podcast, and it's the first time we've come to you guys in 2020. Happy New Year to everybody. But, Kip, there's a lot to talk about, man. Jake Fromm has declared early for the NFL draft. He's one of five guys to declare early for the NFL draft. Georgia's guy had three guys enter the transfer portal. They've had a load of defensive guys decide they're coming back. There's a lot to discuss. There's an offensive roller coaster I feel like Georgia's on right now when you consider signing day, Zach Evans, the Sugar Bowl, and George Pickens, Jake Fromm leaving, Cade Mays leaving, all of that stuff, and we're going to get all of it. But Kip, let's start with Jake Fromm and his exit. What does it mean? Where does Georgia go from here?
I mean, it's really interesting because it's very clear that this was not an easy decision for him. You could tell just from the note that he posted on social media, you know, Wednesday afternoon. He did take some time to make this decision. He met with Kirby Smart, I believe, multiple times. Obviously, not an easy one, but I mean, for Georgia, I mean, this is kind of the end of an era. This was, you know, it's an interesting just story that Jake has wrote during his time at Georgia. It's really tough to kind of just categorize, you know, what his time at Georgia meant, but obviously getting them to that college football playoff and getting that Rose Bowl win, I mean, that is a defining win, the SEC championship obviously as well. Ups and downs for him, for Georgia. I mean, I just think it's kind of a turning point for Kirby Smart, an opportunity kind of to kind of turn the page, but also, you know, to do some self scouting as far as the offense and see what they kind of want to do at this quarterback position. What kind of offense do they kind of want to run moving forward? Because I think it's clear that what they tried to do on the field in the 2019 season, I mean, there were some good things that happened, obviously, but it's not the production that you expect or that you want from a Georgia team that had as much talent as they did on the field.
Yeah, I'm definitely with you on that. It almost feels, Kip, like a little bit of a regime change, almost like a minor coaching change because, you know, Jake Fromm was at Georgia for 3 years, but it felt like a lot longer than that because, you know, it always does when a guy plays and starts as a freshman at the quarterback position, at any position really, but especially the quarterback position. It's just a really interesting dynamic there. And listen, I'm not here to say that Jake Fromm was the greatest quarterback in Georgia history. I'm not here to say that Jake Fromm is in the same conversation as guys like Tua and what Joe Burrow did this year, Trevor Lawrence, you know, even what Justin Fields was able to do this year. I think we all understand that Jake's game is a little different. Jake is not the kind of guy that really, and listen, this is no knock because there are just very, very few people at the college level and at the pro level that can put the team on their back and will them to victory. Okay. I mean, I saw Aaron Murray almost do it against Auburn in his senior season and wasn't able to in 2013. You know, the prayer at Jordan-Hare kind of knocked that down. No pun intended there, I guess, on the knockdown comment. But you know, not very many guys can do it. Jake never did. Now he put Georgia in a situation to win a lot. You're talking about a guy who threw 50 times, 40 times a game routinely in high school, who kind of swallowed his ego, came into Georgia, took a backseat to the run game. He could have been a fun and gun, slinging around sideline to sideline 40 times a game, let his playmakers make the plays type quarterback and put up big numbers. But he didn't. He did whatever it took to put Georgia in position to win. I think you heard his coaches celebrate that. I think Jake Fromm was a great quarterback at Georgia. I think that his time at Georgia should be looked upon fondly. I wrote a column. He left it in a better position than he found it. I mean, the dude went 12-1 against Georgia's biggest rivals while he was on campus, Florida, Georgia Tech, Tennessee, and Auburn, with the lone loss coming at Auburn in 2017, his freshman year, when basically everything went wrong for Georgia. So, you know, there's a lot to you know, be happy about Jake Fromm's tenure at Georgia. I think he should be celebrated. I think he should be looked upon as a guy who did a lot of great things for the Georgia program. He's one of three Georgia quarterbacks since the start of the SEC championship game era to win an SEC championship at Georgia. He's the only quarterback in Georgia history to lead the Bulldogs to more than one SEC champion. Oh, I'm sorry, no, he's not. David Green did it in 2002, 2003. He led Georgia to three. He's the only quarterback to do that. So, and then when you look at, okay, why did he do it? Well, David Green came back for his senior year. Aaron Murray came back for his senior year. There's another one in there I'm forgetting here. Somebody else came back for their senior year too. But those guys, Eric Zier is another example. All of those guys came back for their senior year. All of them, you can make the argument, kind of devalued themselves a little bit with their senior season. And then this kind of takes us into a transition point. Look at what he's losing on the offensive line. Both tackles, starting left guard for the past 2 years, and now, don't know if this factored into his decision, Cade Mays has entered the transfer portal, Kip. So I think all of that kind of factors into the decision. And while I can't really say, you know, from my perspective, from where I'm at right now, and I fully acknowledge I'm not in Jake's shoes, I'm not in Emerson or Lee Fromm's shoes as far as the parents go in the family, it doesn't make all the sense in the world to me. I do get the arguments for him going pro. I think the arguments to stay outweigh it, but ultimately I think that everything has to be considered, and there are some legit arguments to support his decision to go ahead and go pro.
Yeah, I mean, he's not striking while the iron's hot, but he is striking while it's still warm. If Jake feels that this next season could throw some water on that iron, then you definitely just want to leave knowing what you have. You've given the NFL scouts a body of work to go through. You know that he's going to nail the interview process of the NFL Combine. Jake, you know what you're getting in Jake Fromm right now. You're getting a guy who is going to pick up the offense as quickly as possible and is going to, you know, see everything on the field pre-snap and normally get you into the right play and knows where where his progressions are before that ball is snapped. That's not going to change next year. And I think that, you know, for Jake, he's going to be 6'2". He's not going to get any bigger. His arm is not going to get any stronger. I think the things that are going to be knocks on him when that NFL scouting combine rolls around are going to be knocks on him next year as well. You look at this draft class, you know, after you have your Joe Burrow, your Tua, Jacob Eason, Justin Herbert from Oregon, at that point, it's a coin flip between him and Jordan Love from Utah State potentially for that fifth quarterback spot. You know, if that is the case, if that's how it all goes down, then who knows? You know, it's as good a situation as you're going to get. We all know next year the kind of quarterbacks who will be coming out are, you know, with Trevor Lawrence, with probably Justin Fields, you know, new guys are going to emerge. I think that it's a known commodity right now for Jake, you know, that he can take that next step and have a chance to get drafted high enough to go in there and have a real opportunity in the NFL. So I see it from that perspective, but, you know, from George's perspective, Jake, this is this is turning the page. You had a top, arguably, you know, he's going to be a top five quarterback in program history to date. And now You know, it's a new era under Kirby Smart, and as you said, it is almost like a coaching change. And they do have a coaching opening that we haven't even discussed, with Scott Fountain leaving for Arkansas. You know, we're not sure what Kirby plans to do with that position. And, you know, people talk about it potentially being used for, you know, an offensive, you know, position, maybe a quarterback coach. You know, it's all speculation at this point, because they can go in any number of directions with that coaching position. But now you have a starting quarterback job open, and, you know, a coaching position open as well. Kirby Smart has a lot to think about right now, and what direction he wants this program to go in. And I mean, there's some intriguing grad transfer quarterbacks, you know, on the market right now, knowing that Georgia is going to return, you know, zero starts at quarterback right now, with Stetson Bennett coming back, Dwan Mathis, you know, hope potentially continuing to come back from his surgery in the offseason, and true freshman Carson Beck. It's a clean slate, basically, at Georgia for quarterback right now.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And I think that it's not only just a transition period at quarterback. This is a This is a turning point in the road. And I don't know that there's just a fork in the road. This could go a number of different directions for the offense, because Sam Pittman's gone. You've got a new offensive line coach. You've got at least four offensive linemen who I don't even want to even start trying to count up their snaps. It's upwards of – it's more than 50 when you consider Solomon Kinley, Andrew Thomas, Isaiah Wilson, and Cade Mays. Ben Cleveland's status is still up in the air. His father told me, and I keep kind of coming back to this point, told me that the plan was for him to come back. It's no certainty he's on the field in the fall. He has to retake a couple of classes that he missed, that he didn't get credit for in the fall. And if he can get those knocked out and get on good academic standing, then he'll be back. Georgia will be set at right guard. Everything will be hunky-dory. But that's got to happen, and it's still a question mark. And from what I understand, I don't think he can practice with the team during the spring if he's academically ineligible. So that's something else to monitor. Maybe that just gives somebody else some reps. But, you know, looking at the offense, the exodus on the offensive side of the ball, Kip, if you look at the early entries to the NFL draft, there were three guys who left early last year: Isaac Nauta, Riley Ridley, I'm sorry, there are four guys: Isaac Nauta, Riley Ridley, Miko Hardman, and Elijah Holyfield. That's four from last year. Well, you got five this year. So Georgia's 0-9 in keeping its draft-eligible offensive players. Now, I guess you could say that they did keep Solomon Kinley and Ben Cleveland after last year, and so maybe, you know, that factors into it well. But so they're 0-9 on that side of the ball, and they're like 6-7. Somewhere in that neighborhood on the defensive side of the ball, because all of the defensive guys that you thought might have a chance to leave early have elected to come back. Now, that's a good thing, because next year, as you're feeling things out on offense, you should have an elite defense on the other side of the ball. There's I don't think anybody would dispute that fact. But offensively, this has been an absolute roller coaster for Georgia fans, and here's why. They'll go into the early signing period, which we already discussed. We discussed on our last podcast of 2019. They go into the early signing period. They sign Trey Burton. They sign Arian Smith to go with Justin Robinson and Marcus Rosenby, retooling the wide receiver room, one of the best wide receiver hauls in Georgia history, backing up another one of the best wide receiver hauls in Georgia history when they signed Pickens and Blaylock and Tongue. Okay, so you got fans, hey, feeling great about the offense. Well, then you go into the Sugar Bowl, or even before the Sugar Bowl, and the buzz is Georgia's also going to get Zachary Evans to join Kendall Milton in the backfield. Is this running back class potentially an all-time running back class, right up there in the same discussion with Nick Chubb and Sony Michel? I guess that was back in the 2014 class or the 2015 class, 2014 class. So that has got Georgia fans feeling good about it. Then you go to the Sugar Bowl. All those players missing. George Pickens goes in, catches 12 passes for 175 yards. The offense shows some signs of life. You want to think Matt Luke had something to do with that. And from what I'm told, he did. From what I'm told by those close to the situation, Matt Luke did have an impact on that. And then, so you've got all that going on. You're feeling great. Then Evan signs, but Georgia has to release him because he wants to be released. Weird. You don't see that very often. Saw it with Brew McCoy, but what didn't necessarily happen that quickly. Then all of a sudden, guys start leaving. Solomon Kinley, kind of unexpected. Cade Mays, very much unexpected. Jake Fromm, didn't know which way that one was going to go, but we did. We kind of figured it out here in the last 24, 48, maybe 72 hours. What a roller coaster Georgia fans have been on. And that's not even to consider the high points of hiring Luke so quickly after losing Sam Pittman, which was also a factor, and just the overall outlook of how things are going. We're going to go on offense, and that's still yet to even mention what you talked about earlier, the potential staff shuffle to add to the offensive coaching staff. It's a lot. Lots happened in seems like what, 3 or 4 weeks.
I lost my breath just listening to you chronicle all of that. I can't believe that all that's happened, you know, in the last couple of weeks. It's been a true roller coaster for us to cover it as well. I think, you know, especially, you know, just considering the Zach Evans recruitment, I haven't really covered one like that before. And this Tim telling me, you know, he basically shows up to Under Armour giving it away, you know, saying who he had signed with. That his future position coach had just had a rookie, you know, play in and win the Super Bowl. It was a dead giveaway, you know, with Sony Michel that it was Georgia. We thought it was Georgia going in, and we felt pretty good about that. Our sources have told us that he had signed with Georgia, and then he basically just lays it up there like a softball. And, you know, not having a ton of experience talking to Zach Evans in person before that, I came away from that just very surprised. And I remember texting some colleagues at how, you know, this interview had a lot less drama than I thought it would. And little did I know what I had in front of me at that point, just with, him ultimately being released, but the extremely strange interview on TV at the Under Armour game after us being told that morning he was no longer announcing where he had signed with during the early signing period. And then, you know, the awkward apology on camera with Deion Sanders. It's, you know, unfortunately, it leaves more questions than it does answers. But I mean, as soon as I saw that interview, I mean, I went and began writing, you know, the story of him, you know, being released from Georgia, because at that point it became clear that something was amiss here behind the scenes. And you know, we had already heard that he had been talking to, you know, trying to reach out to other programs almost immediately after he signed with Georgia. And now, you know, getting it confirmed that he had been released from his letter of intent to Georgia, kind of closing the door on what is a super strange recruitment. Georgia not even really being mentioned going into December. We thought it was going to be LSU. Now it may be in-state Texas A&M. You know, very, very strange recruitment. Very, very talented running back, but obviously someone who you know, is not there yet as far as learning how to handle the process, just, you know, going into adulthood, some maturity things. He is still a work in progress, like, you know, a lot of us were. But so is it very weird to cover that? And Georgia, you know, obviously that's a premier position in Georgia's offense, bringing in Kendall Milton. He's already on campus, big for Georgia there. Do they go and get another running back now in this class? You know, a lot of guys signed. It's very interesting. It's going to be something we're going to watch maybe down at Colquitt County. You know, Dijon Edwards down there is a guy that Georgia and Florida State continue to recruit, and highly productive against, you know, the best talent in the state of Georgia over his 4 years. That's kind of a guy that we're going to watch moving forward. But so many storylines in the last couple of weeks, and where Georgia goes from here at the quarterback position, Jake, has to be at the top of the list right now for Kirby Smart.
Kip, let's take a break real quick. We're going to come back on the other side. We're going to talk about the whole quarterback thing to wrap up the show. And we're also just going to hit real quickly on the offensive coaching thing and maybe how that might impact the quarterback position. But let's give them a chance to read the ad, and then we'll come back.
hit Paramount Plus original docuseries returns.
The last time I saw Max, he looked at us laughing, and then everything changed in a blink of an eye.
My feeling as a detective is that he was murdered.
Yahoo Entertainment calls it a spine-chilling docuseries showcasing real-life tragedies.
What if it was your child who went missing?
We need to know the truth.
Never seen again. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
All right. Now, Kip, let's put the onions out there. Let's put them out there, as Bill Rafferty says. Let's do it. If you're Georgia right now, based on the options you have, Derek King doesn't count. Chase Bryce doesn't count because neither of those guys are in the transfer portal. Technically, we don't know if either one of those guys are graduates either, for sure. So if you're Georgia, based on what the portal says right now, who's your guy? Who are you going after and why?
It's tough not to be intrigued by Jamie Newman, Jake, just because obviously a guy who can extend those, you know, the play with his legs. And I know they had some, you know, some struggles against some of the better teams that they played at Wake Forest. But I mean, you saw what he was able to do, you know, with the talent around him. I mean, almost 61% completion percentage this year. I think it was 26 touchdowns, 11 interceptions. But it's so intriguing. What would he look like, you know, with the talent around him at Georgia? You know, with the playmakers Georgia's bringing in, the wide receivers you bring in this class to go along with your George Pickens, your Dominic Blaylock coming back from injury. You still have talent at running back as well. You know, if you're looking to see how Kirby Smart may potentially, you know, evolve the offense or potentially just build the offense around what you have at quarterback, which is what you should always do instead of just trying to do the opposite, bring a quarterback in and make him fit in your scheme, you know, adapt the scheme to the who your best player is. You can't really go wrong with Jamie Newman. I mean, there are some questions there. You know, is he still having to take spring classes before he can graduate? Is that a situation where he is not able to get on campus until the summer? That's something I would want to know, because obviously spring ball football is very important, and I know it's very important to Kirby Smart. We saw what he did the last cycle, making sure you had a Stetson Bennett and a Dwan Mathis on campus so that you had your quarterbacks out there in spring ball. We know that's something that he values highly, and if Jamie is not able to come in during the spring, does that affect his opinion of trying to pursue him? You know, that's something that I would want to have that question answered for sure, obviously, and I'd imagine that Georgia already knows that. But for me, I mean, just as far as intriguing, he's at the top of the list. So, I mean, that would be my first pick. But as far as a guy plug and play, I mean, it has to be KJ Costello at Stanford, right? I mean, just based on what he was able to do in 2018 and the potential he has, you know, if you can protect him in that pocket, it seems like the most seamless transition if Kirby's wanting to try to just go and go with a similar game plan. It would have to be KJ.
The only hang-up I have with KJ Costello is the injury history. Two concussions this year is a big deal. And he also had a hand injury. Threw for 3,500 yards as a sophomore, so he's definitely a big-time prospect. I wonder, though, if it's not close enough between Costello and Newman. And obviously, Derek King or Chase Bryce could play a role in this as well if either one of them enter the portal, if either one of them are able to come in as graduates. But I wonder if it's close enough, if you're going to go with one of those two, that you get whoever you can get in the earliest. Because with grad transfers, it's not just the idea that you get a guy in January. You may not be able to get him in June either, because he may have to take like a May semester or something like that. So it may be all the way till July before you can get a guy in. So that's a factor as well. But it's almost like those two are close enough. You might want to consider whoever can come in the soonest. One thing I love about Jamie Newman, and listen, I'm really kind of at a loss for him, not because I don't think he's talented. I do think he's very talented. But if you watch his film, most of his production comes on fade routes, which Georgia has the personnel to do that. But I don't know that that's what the offense is built around. It's not a very, very good play action route, and we know Georgia's going to be run first. Most of his stuff comes on fade routes. You know he doesn't have a ton of talent around him at Wake Forest, although Surratt at Wake Forest is a tremendous player. But then he struggles against the really good teams, but those teams have more talent than him. So if he has equal talent around him, does that balance itself out? That's something you don't really know. I do like the idea of Georgia being a little bit of a work in progress on the offensive line. If getting a mobile guy isn't a much better idea as far as that goes, but I love how Jamie Newman runs the football power run game. When it comes down to short yardage, when it comes down to red zone and goal line, you can get a hat on a hat and basically get the numbers advantage in a situation like that and use his running ability, which is always huge with a mobile quarterback. You just don't know what he can do as far as the full passing game, but you really need a guy who's ready to play. And one thing that always gets forgotten about these quarterbacks is, yeah, they may have to run a new system, but there's a lot that they're already acclimated to: the speed of the game, the language, their capacity to learn. Is they may be dealing with a 5-gallon bucket, whereas a freshman may be dealing with a 1 or 2 or 2.5-gallon bucket, something like that. So that's also an important factor. But I think that's huge. And then I also wonder, Kip, and I want to get your take on this before we close this joker up. What impact, or maybe it's a chicken and egg type situation, does potentially filling that offensive coach, and this is, like you said earlier, this is complete speculation, but what impact does the coaching situation and filling that extra coaching job have on the idea of what kind of quarterback you bring in?
I mean, I think it almost completely centers around it. I mean, it's not just Georgia looking for a, you know, potential grad transfer quarterback, but they're having to sell the quarterback on this being the best system for them to thrive in. I mean, obviously, when a quarterback is transferring, he's trying to, you know, still put himself in a position to potentially play at the next level, or at least have the best potential end to their college career possible. So for Georgia, I mean, do they have to bring in an offensive position assistant? No. But would it be more appealing to potentially Jamie Newman or KJ Costello or whatever quarterback they go after to have someone that, you know, has experience developing quarterbacks and also, you know, running a system that they feel comfortable in? And I'm not saying that person is not James Cauley. I'm saying that it is still an opportunity, and it's something that these quarterbacks are going to watch, because right now there is some uncertainty at Georgia for what this offense is going to look like in 2020. I mean, with Jake Fromm now gone, there's no, you cannot look to this and know exactly what they're going to try to do, because since Kirby Smart got the job, he mentioned when he was hired that, you know, he wanted to bring in a dual threat quarterback. But it just so happens the best quarterback available was Jake Fromm, you know, at that time to run that offense. And he's the one who was given the keys to this offense and at times performed very well. You know, just did not have the strongest junior season to go out on. And I think that there's a lot of question marks right now, and it could go either way. And so it does just feel like that turning point where Kirby Smart has multiple decisions to make at the same time, but also, you know, multiple opportunities. I mean, when a player leaves, it gives you a chance to, you know, I don't want to say upgrade, but it gives you a chance to turn the page another direction. Just like with the offensive lineman leaving, and, you know, if you want to look forward, now the recruiting opportunity is there for Matt Luke to come in and keep his two verbal commitments in 5-star offensive tackle Broderick Jones and 4-star center Cedric Van Pran. You can now go to these guys and say, listen, I just lost 4 starters on my offensive line, and I think that you guys are a perfect fit. The opportunity is there for you to come in and play early. There's not a better recruiting pitch to any prospect than the opportunity is there. The job is wide open. And not to take anything away from guys like Xavier Truss, Warren McClendon, guys on campus who still have a lot of talent and have not had that opportunity. That's what recruiting is all about. You know, the best sales pitch possible is playing time, and that is now there for Broderick Jones and Cedric Van Pran, while teams like Florida come after Cedric, teams like Auburn still push for Broderick. Georgia now has that in their pocket to be able to pitch to these guys, and now Kirby Smart potentially has that to be able to pitch to a transfer quarterback. So, I mean, these are the decisions that he signed up for, and this is definitely going to be a big couple of weeks for Kirby Smart as he tries to map out where Georgia goes in 2020.
One thing I leave everybody with here is this. If Georgia is indeed going to shuffle the coaching staff a little and bring in an offensive guy, whether it's move Todd Hartley to special teams, bring in a tight ends coach, or move, you know, James Coley around and bring in a quarterback's coach, whatever. Again, all speculation. Have no idea what's going to happen there just yet. Very tight-lipped on that thus far. I think it makes it happen quicker when you consider you probably want to let that guy, if there is a guy, you probably want to give, especially if it's quarterback's coach, you want to give that guy an opportunity to maybe evaluate who he wants to bring in. And I say that knowing that grad transfers in general, the portal, same recruiting calendar as prep athletes and JUCO prospects, okay? So January 16th is when the dead period ends, and that's when all of this talk and recruiting and everything is going to be able to start happening, not necessarily from – it's from a face-to-face point of view, before you can get to see a guy and size him up and all that stuff. So there's time, but I wonder with a guy that's been as deliberate as Kirby Smart has, and there's been some times when he's acted quickly. Matt Luke is an example of that. Trey Scott's an example of that. But I wonder if that might not speed things up a little bit, because you know they're going to want to try to get that grad transfer quarterback in place in the near future, especially if it's a guy that maybe can enroll this spring and go through spring ball. And time's running out there because we're already 2 days into classes at UGA, and they're going to want to add a guy before drop ad ends and get him involved with the team right away. But I wonder if that doesn't kind of speed up the process, having those multiple decisions. And like you said, When he put the name on the dotted line and the date and all that stuff, and he initialed all these different categories, you know what a big contract looks like. When he did that for an average of $7 million a year for 7 years, he signed up for this. And he's big decisions to make, decisions that are going to impact this program in 2020, 2021, and beyond. And that's his job, and he has a big one ahead of him. And like I said, the Georgia is going to field an absolutely elite defense, at least for the next two seasons, the way it's recruited, and probably beyond. So that very much helps this team kind of have some margin for error. If the offense looks like it did the second half of the season early next year and gets better as the year goes along, Georgia's going to win a lot of games. And I think that's something you can look forward to as a Georgia fan. I'm sure we're going to have a lot more to talk about regarding the quarterback situation, the coaching situations, stuff we didn't get to on this show, the defensive players that came back. Obviously, we want to dig into the defense and how good it can be in future podcasts. But for this one, that's all we've got. I'm Jake Rowe with Dogs 24/7, Kip Adams with Dogs 24/7, and this has been the Junkyard Dogcast. Take it easy, everybody.
Rise and shine, football fans. This is Susanna Fuller from Morning Footy, a podcast part of the CBS Sports Galazzo Network covering the breadth of the global game. Join me, Nico Cantor, Charlie Davies, Alexis Guerreros, and guests every morning for the perfect blend of news, analysis, conversation, and exclusive interviews. If you love soccer, then look no further. We've got you covered for Europe's top five leagues, the W Gold Cup, the Champions League knockout stage, CONCACAF Nations League, NWSL, MLS, transfer news, and much more. Download and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere podcasts are found. Subscribe to Morning Footy.